Martha Well, Chair of the Education Council, and a DEC member for Sub-District 13. So we'd certainly like to welcome everyone here tonight. We also have the MLA, Mr. Kirk McDonald, and the mayor, Mr. Mark Foreman, and also some village council members, so welcome. We're just going to ask the individual DEC members to stand up and introduce themselves by name and their sub-district, and then we'll just turn it over to Mr. McTimmon, and he can take care of the introductions and the presentation. So, John.
John Slip, Sub-District 3, from Woodstock area.
Elizabeth Nathan, Sub-District 12. I take in the area of Lincoln, Gagetown, Burton, and Freddie Junction.
John Gould, Sub-District 11, Minto, Chipman, Cambridge, and Coles Island.
Kimberly Douglas, Doketown, Boystown, Stanley, and Nashville Shore.
Good evening, my name is Tim Nichols, and I represent First Nation communities in Anglophone West.
Andrew Corey, Sub-District 5, will be Harvey and Adam areas.
Sheila Gallagher, I'm up at the Quebec border, and I come down to Pershing and over.
Ron Black, Fredericton North, in Ashwalk City area, of which Fredericton's a suburb. And four in Ashwalk City schools, and Royal Road School, and Keswick Ridge School.
And I'm Jay Buckley, Sub-District 9, the other half of the north side of Fredericton.
I'm Dave Bowen, Sub-District 6, which is half of Fredericton South, and at the present time, I'm also looking at for Sub-District 7 as well, so the minister will make an appointment very, very soon.
Thank you to the District Education Council. Good evening, everyone. My name is David McTimmon, and I'm the superintendent for the Anglophone West School District. I'm pleased to see some staff from Anglophone West here this evening. Carol Clark Catarini is the best executive assistant in the world and works side by side with me day in and day out. Tanya Whitney is the director of schools for the Fredericton Education Center, which includes the Stanley area. Philip Cliff is the facilities manager. Mark Manderson is the assistant manager for transportation in the Fredericton area, which would include Stanley. Daniel Wishart is the transportation manager for Anglophone West, and Sean Tracy is the director of finance and administration. And they're here tonight to help me and to, of course, listen carefully to the presentation. I have a very concise 90-slide presentation, and I remember from my days of teaching that I did everything I could to keep the students awake and engaged, and I'll do the same tonight, but basically I'm going to talk for about the next hour, and actually my hope is that you'll find it interesting. I'll probably get ahead of myself a little bit with the presentation, and if you're okay, I'll likely sit down. But the presentation tonight is a part of the sustainability study for the what I've been calling the Stanley School Complex. And this sustainability study is happening under Provincial Policy 409. And you can see here a table of contents where we'll talk about the specifics of the Stanley Schools and provide a lot of information. Some of which you may be familiar with already, some that you might find interesting, some you might find a little bit boring once we start talking about water filtration systems and that kind of stuff. Some of you might find that really exciting, but it's a lot of information. Don't feel that you have to necessarily take notes, because this presentation is available to the public. When we get back to work tomorrow morning, Carol will upload it to the website, and I'll show you the website partway through the presentation as well. So I'll take my seat here. I know that there might be questions along the way. This is our second meeting, and I found that it worked really well if I work my way through the presentation, and then at the end we'll have questions with respect to some of the details, and I'm happy to flip back and forth throughout the presentation to try and answer your questions. You can hear me okay at the back? So our agenda tonight, and maybe you picked up a copy, we've gone through the introductions. I'll talk a little bit about policy 409 and then move into the presentation of facts about our two schools here in Stanley. At the end of that presentation, we'll have some questions and answers, and then talk about what's next in the sustainability study. A little bit about provincial policy 409. It's titled the Multi-Year School Infrastructure Planning Policy, and it outlines a number of responsibilities with respect to our facilities in the system. There are some specific subsections within that policy that are relevant to what we're experiencing now with the sustainability studies. And in particular, throughout for a sustainability study, there needs to be three public meetings. The first meeting, which is tonight, is a meeting that's focused on the presentation of facts about the school. So it's me talking, it's me presenting and sharing with you all the facts that we could think of with respect to the two Stanley schools. The second public meeting for Stanley, it's February 5th, is a presentation from the stakeholders that are interested regarding their thoughts on the sustainability of the school and relevant factors. So there might be a presentation from the PSSC or a presentation from a community group or village council or whoever chooses. We have, I'll explain it a little bit later, but we have a registration process so that we can build an agenda for that second public meeting. And on that public meeting, I won't speak very much. I'll be with the council and just listen to the thoughts of the public. And then, of course, the third public meeting will be a meeting that is where we would see the District Education Council make a decision on what they believe should occur as a result of the study. It's important to note that a sustainability study isn't designed as an us against them type of process. The public meetings aren't really designed to facilitate debate. So I'm not here to try and convince you or to convince the deck of of trying to go in one direction or another. My role tonight is to present the facts. And then, of course, for the second meeting, the role will be for the public to present their thoughts. And all along, the District Education Council has that responsibility to listen closely, to reflect on what's being said, all in the name of trying to formulate in their mind what should happen when they get to that third public meeting in March. So I'll start right into some information about enrollment. By the way, the topics that we go through, these are topics that are outlined in policy 409. So the policy actually outlines the subtopics that should be discussed in any sustainability study, public meeting number one. You can see here in for Stanley Elementary, over the last number of years, we had a stretch from 2008 to 2012 where the enrollment was pretty steady, always within one or two or three students in the 122 to 125 range. Took a little bit of a dip over the last couple of years, and this year we are sitting at 104 students. The enrollment numbers would be September 30th numbers. That's the official date where we count enrollment for the year. You can see here this information is showing the enrollment by grade, and it's just another way to look at the enrollment. In fact, when we make projections for the future, you'll see that in the upcoming slides, it's a pretty simple process of sort of moving the grades forward. And please remember, you'll have access to this presentation electronically on our website. So when we look at the projection of enrollment based on the numbers that we have, we're forecasting sort of a leveling out in 2 or 3 years in the low 90s for enrollment. Functional capacity is a term that's been floated around a little bit, and And I know when we had our public meeting in October, that seemed to be the term that that the media certainly used as a defining factor. Functional capacity is basically a rating that compares the enrollment with the size, with the number of classrooms that are available. And it's not a figure that should be used as a standalone. There are a lot of, there are a lot of considerations when you look at school capacity and functional capacity, but it's just one piece of the puzzle that allows somebody to get a quick snapshot of the space that's available within the school. And in this particular case, this functional capacity is using the September 30th numbers from the year before, and it compares to the capacity using the number of classrooms, and the functional capacity comes out to about 57.8%. So once again, it's not a standalone number that you would ever use, but it's just another piece of the puzzle when it comes to trying to make a determination of how full a school might be. There's a rough guideline that education officials use, and they say if the functional capacity is between 80 and 100%, school is considered pretty full. If it's between 60 and 80%, it's considered somewhat optimal. And if it's below 60%, then it's considered as a building that has a good amount of available space available. When we look at Stanley High, our enrollment over the last 6 or 7 years, you can see in 2008 it was at 200 students. We're down to about 148 for this year. Consistent with last year, it appears that we've leveled off a little bit after a decline over the three previous years. Another example of showing the enrollment by grade level. Once again, we've used this classification of numbers in trying to make a rough estimation of projections for the future. You can see that with respect to projections for the future, we don't see a sharp incline or increase in enrollment or decline in enrollment in the next 4 or 5 years. Where we saw a little bit of a decline in the elementary, if we were to carry on this graph for a few more years, one might suppose that we'd see a dip in enrollment further ahead into the future. We look at functional capacity as well in the high school setting. The functional capacity, once again, a comparison of student enrollment to space available due to the number of classrooms that can be used, and we have a functional capacity of about 47.7%. We'll move now into a little bit about the facility itself, the health and safety building assessment. The original high school was built in 1948, a wood frame structure with a wooden roof and interior wood walls, concrete support beams. The original elementary school was constructed in 1964 with a similar structure to the high school. And then, of course, in 1992, there were some major renovations that were completed. Complete upgrade to the existing schools and the addition of a link, which included the gymnasium, the library, the multi-purpose room, and the cafeteria additions to connect the two schools. So it was back in 1992 where the connection of the two schools came together with that significant renovation and upgrade. A quick picture of the school, and this is the basement floor. Once again, when you have a chance to go through this on your own and on your own computer, you might take some time to look. Here's the first floor of the facility. There's the second floor. The The elementary wing was constructed with 15 classrooms. Presently, 9 are being used for classroom teaching spaces. And there are 2 classrooms that are being used for staff and photocopying rooms, and 1 being used for an arts and science room, another being used for the music room, and 2 classrooms as spare rooms. In the high school wing was constructed with 12 classrooms, 9 currently being used for classroom teaching areas. 1 is used for an additional gym or fitness area. 1 being used as an intervention area, literacy space, and 1 is classified as spare space at this time. When you look at the stairwells and the corridors, our stairwells are complete with fire doors and they meet the National Fire Code. The building is mostly accessible via an elevator that is located within the gym entrance lobby. The shop area has a lift that's not currently operational. It is on our capital improvement list for replacement. I'll talk a little bit more about capital improvements a few slides down the road. Fire protection. A Siemens FS250C fire alarm system that's been installed and the building has a sprinkler system. And fire extinguishers are located throughout the building. We have our fire alarm pull stations, too, located at the exits from the building. Water, we have water from private well that passes through a Sterilite ultraviolet water sterilizer and a filter before it enters into the distribution system. The hot water is heated with electric hot water tanks. 2 are located in each of the elementary and high school wings. There is currently a septic system, which is piped to a lift station and then on to the municipal system. For heating and ventilation, there are 2 oil-fired boilers that circulate hot water heat. There's an air handling unit in the basement floor, a mechanical room that supplies fresh air to the main high school. There are 3 separate air handling units located on the top floor mechanical room, which supplies fresh air to the gym, the locker rooms, and the elementary school. Washrooms would also have a mechanical exhaust from those washroom spaces. For controls and communications, in 2012, there was an upgrade. The control system was replaced with a new Delta Direct Digital Controls, DDT system, and these controls are accessible remotely through a modem. The washroom exhaust and boiler and circulating pumps are on the control systems, and the system has a Bogan MC2K public address system. So that's the public address system where from the main office the announcements can be made into the classrooms. When it comes to electrical and lighting, there is a 1200 amp 600 volt service entrance located on the basement floor of the high school wing. There are some new fluorescent lights that have been installed in the majority of the high usage areas. And the gym has a high intensity discharge lighting and the multipurpose room has fluorescent lighting. The exterior windows and siding were replaced and repaired during that big 1992 upgrade. The exterior windows in the elementary school were also replaced in 2010. The property is a shared entrance and exit onto Bridge Street. There are 2 main parking lots, an upper and a lower parking lot, that the staff and visitors would share. The driveway bus loading zone is along the side of the high school and at the rear for the elementary school. And there is a fenced-in compound, a tennis court, soccer field, significant amount of playground structures in the elementary area, along with green space for alternate activities. These are some recent capital investments that have occurred here at the schools. With you may be familiar with the capital improvement projects. They're an annual set of projects that are approved by government to improve and invest in our buildings. You can see that the most recent, in the year 2013, there was a heating system upgrade. Again, some thermostat and control systems and the boiler. radon, and I'm guessing this is probably a radon remediation program that occurred in the year 2011. Heat exchanger, exterior windows, and some roof work in 2009, 2008. We have a few projects on the list that we hope to be approved by government in the years ahead. Each year there's an annual exercise completed by the District Education Council where they look at our, I'll say, 450 projects that we might have logged covering the 75 schools in our system, in our district, and try and create a prioritized list to send to government, and then government will make decisions on the dollars that can be invested on an annual basis into the buildings. So, looking for some site improvement to replace the back entrance steps in the elementary wing, as well as upgrading the playing field. I mentioned earlier looking to replace the existing lift in the shop area and some improvements and additions with respect to washrooms. For electrical, looking to upgrade electrical distribution to support additional receptacles in the classrooms, as well as switchgear cleaning and repair. And if you ask me a question about that, I'll just turn to Philip a little bit later. The total cost for these amount to about $713,000. We'll move now away from the facilities and talk a little bit more about educational programs and services. This is the FTE. FTE stands for full-time equivalent, and it's the term we use when it comes to defining staff. So you can see here we have FTE for classroom teachers, 6.6 at the elementary school and 11.2 at the high school. When it comes to administration, 0.5 is assigned for the elementary with 0.8 to the high school. Likewise, there is FTE assigned to guidance. There's a shared guidance counselor, so the same person has actually combined the 0.3 and the 0.7. And then there is FTE assigned to resource. The FTE, by the way, is assigned by the district after the district gets an allotment from the department, and there's a funding formula that we use to help distribute the FTE. And basically, at an elementary school, you get 1.1 FTE for every homeroom. So you can see here for our elementary school, there are 6.6 FTE. So there are six homerooms. 6 times 1.1 gives the 6.6. At the middle level, it's 1.2 for the each homeroom. And then in the high school, there's a series of ratios that outline how much FTE you get for the first 100 students, and then another amount for the next 200 students, and so on. For administration, you get FTE based on one for every 275 students. For guidance, it's a ratio of one for every 502. students, and for resource it's one for every 180. Now when it comes to the district assigning the FTEs out to the schools, we don't simply translate the enrollment into the formula and say, here, this is what you get. We put the formula in place for all 75 schools, and then we go through it again with the extra FTE that we may have, and we try and top up where we can. So I'll use guidance as an example. If you were to put the numbers into the formula, at the elementary school it should be 0.21, and at the high school, if I remember correctly, it should be 0.29. So that's what the formula spits out, but before we hand out the FTE, we need to go through each and every scenario, and where we can, we like to try and top up to make it more workable at the school. Just for some comparable schools, we picked Kings Clear Consolidated School, which is a school in the western end of the city of Fredericton. You can see some comparison here. The guidance shows an example of where we felt Stanley could be topped up a little bit more than Kings Clear. Here's a comparable for the high school. Chipman Forest Avenue is a comparison. So you can see the population of Chipman Forest Avenue, about 40 extra students. So naturally you would expect the FTE assigned to each of those based on formulas to be a little bit more. We looked at also a comparison of a K to 12 school. And here we had chosen Canterbury High School, which has a population a little less of what Stanley Elementary and Stanley High would be if combined. So again, you could expect when you compare for the FTE to be a little bit less with that smaller population. I'll note that we have five K to 12 schools in our district. And there was a great comment that I noted on the discussion board for the Stanley Sustainability site that asked a lot of questions about K to 12 schools. And I reached out to those five principals and asked some questions of them and created a document that talked a little bit about their life as a K to 12 school, and actually uploaded that to our website today. So if you have a chance to check out that document, it may be worth your while. I'll also point out that throughout this presentation, I'll put out the what ifs. One thing that I should have mentioned at the beginning is with the sustainability study, the District Education Council has a mandate to make one of three decisions. And if you look at policy 409, you'll see that clearly written. One choice could be to maintain the status quo. And if that's the case, if that's what's decided on March 19th, then everything's over, it's done, and status quo remains. If we, a second choice would be for the DEC to make a recommendation to the minister that he invest significantly in infrastructure and in programming. Notice it's a little bit of a change there, and I say the council can make the recommendation to the minister. When it comes to that decision, it's not the council that says we will invest more in programming and invest more in infrastructure, because the District Education Council gets its money from the province. So that's where it turns to a recommendation to the minister. And then the third choice is a recommendation for closure. Now, in the sustainability studies that we're doing, there are three of them underway. When it comes to using that term closure, in the two other scenarios, when the DEC thinks about closure, talks about moving students from one school that would close into another school in another area. When it comes to Stanley Elementary and Stanley High, it's a little bit unique in that the council is not giving any consideration to taking students and moving them outside of the village of Stanley. What the council is going to consider is whether it should remain as two schools operating in one building, or if the third choice were there, whether it should be consolidated into one building. So again, that would be a recommendation to the minister. And then the minister has no less than 30 days and no more than 60 days to make a decision on that recommendation. So I should have pointed that out when I talked about policy 409 a little bit earlier. When it comes to class sizes, the teachers, through their collective bargaining unit, have negotiated with government what the maximum class size would be for specific grade levels. So in grades kindergarten 1 and 2, the maximum number of students in any particular class cannot go over 21. Likewise, you'll see for grade 3, it's 26. Grade 4 to 6, it's 28. And grade 7 to 12, it's 29. There's actually a clause in the collective agreement that says if for unforeseen circumstances there is an additional student that moves into a maximum class size between grades 3 to grade 6, it can be accommodated, but it's for unforeseen circumstances. So if you started the year in September with 27 kids, then you can't put them all in one grade 3 class. But if you have a grade 3 class of 26 kids and a student moves to town in February, it's acceptable for it to be 27. And I note that that's only for grades 3 through 6. You've heard from time to time about combined classes. In fact, in Anglophone West, we would have 107 combined classes throughout our 75 schools. The maximum class size for a combined class is a little bit less. So anything that might involve a kindergarten, grade 1, or grade 2, the maximum class size is 16. If it's a combination of anything from 3 to 5, the maximum class size is 23. Or a combination of grade 5 and above, it would be 24. Thought it might be interesting to show some student-to-teacher ratios historically. So Stanley Elementary first, you can see here the ratio of about 15.6 students to 1 for this year. It's down a little bit from last year. Likewise, in the high school, 147 was the enrollment at a 13.1 to 1 ratio and a 13.5 ratio the year before. For some comparisons, I'll go back to the K to 5 scenario, Kingsclear Consolidated. Pretty comparable, obviously. If we look at Stanley High compared to Chipman Forest Avenue, the ratio's a touch better by about one student here in Stanley. And if we were to look at the combined scenario, we can see in comparison to Canterbury, it would be a touch better if we were using the numbers that we have right now. These are the actual classes that are currently in place. There's one at each grade level, except for grade 3, where we have a 3-4 combined class. And those are the class sizes. Likewise, we have the class sizes for the grade 6 to 12. Here are some comparisons. At Kingsclear, because of the way the numbers fell, their organization of classes is a little bit different. So you'll notice none of them are above the maximum class size. And here's Chipman. So you can see there are two grade 9 classes at 17 and 17. If we put those together, it would be 34, which is above the maximum class size. Notice I have 33 there in grade 11. It's okay to classify that in grade 11 and grade 12 because in the credit system, they don't travel together as a class anymore. And in grade 11 and 12, their different kids are taking different courses. So there wouldn't be a particular class that would be more than the maximum class size, but there are 33 grade 11 students. There are other valued staff besides teachers in our schools. We have two EAs, educational assistants at Stanley Elementary, three at the high school, one administrative assistant at each. The library assistant, there's no FTE assigned to that with the community library, and there is custodial staff that's assigned, two to Stanley Elementary and 2.64 to Stanley High. There are formulas in place for the custodial staff based on space. When it comes to EAs, there's an annual process for determining the number of EAs to be assigned to the school based on priorities, not only within the school, but across the district. We have about 500 EAs that get assigned throughout Anglophone West. When it comes to programs, physical education specialist offers 90 minutes per week of phys ed to each K-5 class. There is a numeracy and literacy specialist who can provide support throughout the year. EST stands for Education Support Teacher. So as numeracy education support teacher and literacy education support teacher. Lots of special events, and as community members, I'm sure you recognize a very active school that takes great pride in what they do and great contributors to the community. So I'll give you a second to have a look at all those great special events and initiatives. This is for the elementary school. And likewise for the high school. Some really neat things that are going on in our schools, with thanks to students who are really interested in life beyond the classroom, and the staff who's dedicated to providing opportunities, and a community who cares about their schools. Provincial assessment, that's another category that Policy 409 asks us to have a look at. You can see here the grade 2 reading results over the last 5 years and a comparison with the district level. And if you look at last year's results, Stanley Elementary did extremely well with 85.7% meeting with success or above. And you can see that's above the district and provincial averages. And it's a big jump from the year before. If we look at a five-year history, we see a little up and a little down, and we're certainly in an upward swing right now. Grade 4 reading is another provincial assessment result. Only 3 years of data because there were changes in the provincial assessment system. But once again, you can see that Stanley Elementary did very well over those years. Grade 5 numeracy, and of course this has been in, numeracy has been in the news a little bit of late, and you can see here that the most recent information is a 20% sample of students, so the district information and provincial information is based on a sample. There'd be no school information available. That's a recent change to the assessment program, and the provincial assessment program actually continues to change, but if you look back historically, again, you can see some ups and downs with respect to numeracy results. By the way, you can check out the assessment results and perception surveys of any school in our province. It's all public information and available on the Department of Education website. It's always neat to look at a little bit of perception data. 2013-14 student perception survey results, grade 4s and 5s participated in the survey. 89% of the students said that they feel accepted and valued by their peers and others in the building, contributing to a positive sense of belonging. 95% of the students reported that they felt safe attending their school. And 70% of students felt that they were interested and motivated in their learning. There's a, when it comes to benefits, there's certainly a strong knowledge of individual students as well as their strengths and their needs. These smaller class settings really create an opportunity for staff to provide one-on-one attention more readily. And there's a culture of collaboration that's been established among staff. High academic and behavioral expectations for the students in this school. Some of the school challenges, the staff in positions of responsibility have a large percentage of time dedicated to teaching, so in particular the principal has 0.5 time for administration and 0.5 assigned to teaching. When funding for extracurricular activities is determined by student enrollment, there can be some some limitations in activities if the school just has to count on that global budget. As we move into the high school, grade 7 reading is another area of assessment that's current in our province, although it's, again, as I mentioned before, it's changing. You can see some pretty consistent results with the most recent year. It's top year in the last 5, and handy to the district and provincial average. So some improvements there. Grade 7 writing, we saw the move to a sample. So once again, no Stanley High School data available for this past year. But you can see the 4 previous years. Writing seems to be a little bit lower than reading when it comes to the provincial assessment. Grade 8 numeracy. This is the one that was in the news quite a bit. And you can see that not only as a province, but as a district and as a school, grade 8 numeracy would be an area that we really need to focus on and target some key interventions to try and turn that around. Grade 9 English language arts proficiency. This is actually a graduation requirement. A little bit of dip last year from the year before at Stanley High, where we saw 72 students achieve successful or greater. In the last 5 years, there was a peak in 09-10 with 87.5% meeting with success or higher. The provincial target is actually 85, so that particular year, the target was met. When it comes to writing, you can see the scores is better with writing. So I'll remind you once again, you'll be able to take your time in moving through this PowerPoint. Perception data from the high school, students of grade 6 to 12 participated. 68% of the students felt that they feel accepted and valued by their peers and others in the building, contributing to a positive sense of belonging. 88% of the students feel safe attending their school. 77% of the students reported that they really value school outcomes and see the importance of education to their future. And 45% of students reported that they were interested and motivated in their learning. Of course, some of the benefits you would see mirror the benefits at the elementary school, strong knowledge of individual students, their strengths and their needs. They're able to complete their middle and high school in one building and maintain those relationships with staff. Students at Stanley also take advantage of opportunities with the distance education program, distance ed courses. Some of the challenges, again, you'll see some comparison here that staff in positions of responsibility have a large percentage of time dedicated to teaching. The school is limited in the number of high school programs that can be offered in grade 11 and 12 in a face-to-face environment. And funding for extracurricular activities, once again, if it's for that portion that's allotted by student enrollment, there can be some limitations based on the smaller student enrollment. Transportation, we have a section on transportation as well. Can tell you that 250 students are transported daily. We use 6 school buses here for Stanley. About 750 kilometers of road traveled each day, or about 135,000 kilometers a year. The very first student picked up in the morning is 10 to 7, which is a very early morning. And the last student dropped off is at 4:25. The average riding time is about 25 minutes each way, inbound and outbound. There's not much with respect to transportation here because regardless of what happens, if it's status quo or if there's a consolidation, the transportation would stay the same. can tell you a little bit about the money related to Stanley. How's that look at the back? Pretty small, probably, is it? Basically, this is a three-year comparison. And in the first, this is Stanley Elementary, and in the first section, the amount closest to the left, this amount right here, is the most recent year. And when it comes to salaries, it's $760,000, down from $794,000 the year before, down from $802,000 the year before. And those salaries would include the salaries for admin, the responsibility allowance, the teacher salaries, which would be the biggest amount, the admin assistants, the education assistants, and the cleaning staff. Likewise, there's a section here, slide my finger up nicely, with respect to a global budget for instruction and administrative support, teacher working conditions fund, nutrition, wellness, co and extracurricular trips, and PSSC. $18,056 is the current amount for the last fiscal year, down from $22,755 and $22,906 the years before. These budgets are handed out through a variety of different formulas, and most of the formulas are linked to student enrollment. Then we can look at facility costs, and the facility costs, we've included heating fuel, cleaning supplies, and minor repairs. Last year sat at about $38,800, up a touch from $35,981. And $38,713. So a cost of about $817,000 for the 2013-14 fiscal year. We say fiscal year, by the way, because a fiscal year is different than a school year. The fiscal year runs from April 1st to March 31st. Similar information for Stanley High School. So when we look at salaries, again, administration, teaching, admin assistant, education assistant, and cleaning staff, about $1.166 million, which is down a touch from $1.171 million the year before and $1.275 million the year before that. Again, there are global budgets that are assigned. Last year it was at $38,528, compared to the year before at $47,206, which was up from the year before, $39,888. And then the building costs, here we have electricity, water and sewer, garbage removal, ground maintenance, heating fuel, cleaning supplies, and minor repairs, amounting to about $160,562. I'll turn to Philip right now. Philip, would some of these costs be associated with both schools?
Yes.
Okay. So would some of those shared costs, they're classified in this chart as opposed to the other one? So you might take a closer look at that when you have your glasses and you're at home with your computer. Impact on the community. This is a good time to go back to the way the public consultation is supposed to work. Again, this public meeting is me standing at the front, talking to you, sharing facts. There is one category within Policy 409 that calls for us to talk about the impact on the community. And we do our best to try and gather information. There's also another section that talks about economic, forget the actual word, but the economic development. So once again, we're educators. We go out, we talk to people, we try and put something together. We might not necessarily get everything, but if you look at the mandate of the second public meeting, this is where you as the community will really come in and play a role. And my guess is that there'll be people who stand here at the front and present to the deck and present to the public their feelings on the impact on the community, as well as the impact on economic development with respect to this sustainability study. So I'll share some of our findings. We would expect that parent access to the school for activities would remain the same, that partnerships between community service groups and the local community school would remain the same. Potential for consistent communication and less confusion on the organization of community events with one school administrator. The school would remain supportive to the growth in the community for students in grades K to 12. So those are some points that we felt we could mention with respect to the what if it was a consolidated school. Impact on other schools, really there wasn't much of an impact on other schools because we're not looking at students leaving the village of Stanley and going to Fredericton or other neighboring communities. The facility would remain the same, blending the two schools within the one existing building. There would be, of course, an impact with respect to staff and with respect to administration. That's probably the one that stands out the most, in that if it was one school, then one principal and one vice principal would take the lead of the school. We tried to talk a little bit here about FTE, and I've already given a little bit of an explanation with respect to formulas. So the staffing for teachers should follow the same formula that's currently being used to staff two separate schools. There could be an opportunity to blend assignments. There is an opportunity to blend assignments now, but with one school, it would be the single coordination of this that could be beneficial. With respect to administration, the current FTE for administration is 1.3 when you look at the two different schools. And as I mentioned, in terms of people, there are three people now, two principals and one vice principal. By the way, a vice principal is assigned also according to the collective agreement, and it's linked to the number of teachers, and the threshold is 12.4 teachers. And an integrated school could see one principal and one vice principal, and that impact would be considering how to, there would be an impact considering how we would proceed. With assigning the new administration roles, decisions would be guided by the teachers' collective agreement. ESS stands for Education Support Services Staff. And of course, the current FTE, as I mentioned, for a resource is 1.8 when you combine the two schools, one for high and 0.8 for elementary. And the guidance comes out to 1.0. Currently, the guidance counselor is one person shared between the two schools, and there would currently be two separate, at the time there are two separate ESS teams, and there would be a transition to one education support services team if the two schools were to combine as one. Of course, that would mean a blending of procedures and a blending of meeting formats. When it comes to facilities and settings, the classroom space, the impact may be minimal if the configuration of the classrooms remains the same. The reception and office area, the impact would be considering a central reception and office area. This would impact staff and students, parent and office interaction. And in fact, one person brought that up in conversation as well in the online discussion board. There would have to be some consideration on what the office space were to look like if the two schools were to combine into one. When it comes to common meeting spaces, a staff room, a meeting room, the impact would be to look at the existing common spaces and establish common areas for integrated school, as well as maintaining existing meeting spaces that work for teacher planning. And my guess is there's probably some sharing that's occurring right now. When it comes to student common spaces, the cafeteria, gymnasium, that scheduling is currently shared, and the difference would be one administration overseeing it as opposed to two. When it comes to the outside space and the busing area, potentially little impact. Student culture, that's one thing that needs to be considered by the council as they deliberate on what should happen. The impact on the building as a whole school, thinking about a vision and a mission and codes of expectations and behavior and conduct. The staff culture as well. You know, a whole school identity versus the level identity of K to 2, 3 to 5, 6 to 8, and creating that whole school identity, maintaining the respect for the different developmental areas. Some community expectations as well, we need to think about that. Governance, right now there are two PSSCs. We'd have to think about the merger of PSSCs into one body. We would count on the Education Act guiding us in how to do that. The home and school as well, potential merger of separate parent groups that would now be facilitated by the administration. And then when it comes to parents, it would be a centralized communication. Combination of resources, the budgets would be more centralized. It would be relatively the same for those that are assigned, those budgets that are assigned based on student population. We wouldn't see a significant change there. The potential for teacher-to-teacher collaboration could be expanded, and student-to-student collaboration, we'd have to have some central coordination. Economic development. Once again, we as a staff make an attempt to sort of step outside our comfort zone. We gave this a go, and once again, I give credit to those who are using the online discussion board because some great ideas came up, and we went back and talked a little bit more. And I'm sure there's more out there, and that's why I encourage people to take that time during public meeting number two to present their thoughts. Here are some of the things that we came up with. The Village of Stanley, which was incorporated in 66, may be poised for some economic development. Of course, the Sisson Ridge Mine Project is probably the most, it would be tops on that list. It's expected to create 750 jobs in the construction phase, and then 250 to 300 permanent jobs in the operations phase. The operations phase is expected to last 27 years, and some of the employees could reside in or near the Village of Stanley. I fit this website in because the folks from Sisson, make sure I might not have the right terminology, the folks involved in this project have a document that's public. I've included the website. They noted sometimes it's hard to find if you go digging through it, but this is a link to it. I've also uploaded a section of that report specific to the project on the Stanley sustainability site, so it might be something that you have a look at. Other things that were found, the recently built Nashwalk Villa secured about 65 jobs, and it's expected to last 50 years. Once the construction of the new health center is completed, the old center will be converted to an assisted living complex, creating additional jobs. Rural Planning District Commission is in the process of developing a new rural plan for the Stanley area. The population of Stanley has remained steady over the last several years. A number of recreational opportunities for residents, including a women's gym program at the local Lions Club, several local walking trails, recently developed youth recreational activities are provided in conjunction with local churches. I, for one, was in Stanley last Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the hockey tournament. A listing of the businesses and organizations that are currently here in the community. You can see a number of them here. Maybe some of you are owners or operators or managers or employees. So as I'm this is one of those examples where I'm presenting to the public a lot of stuff that you know, but these folks who aren't maybe as familiar with Stanley find this quite interesting. Some businesses that have closed in recent years are going a little ways back, I see there for CIBC. Some recent construction. And these were the consultations that occurred. And when I say consultation, to put together, I didn't put together this 90-slide presentation by myself. A lot of these individuals, as well as other staff members, each took a little section and went out and did their work. One of our staff members had this section as his responsibility, and you probably, if you're on this list, you maybe heard from Wayne. I'm coming to the end here. Provincial Policy 409. I just want to talk about how we got to today. The determination was made by the District Education Council to review the sustainability of, and I meant to have three schools here, and this is an error on my part, I apologize. This should say Coles Island School, Stanley School, and Bath Middle School under Policy 409. And that decision was made at the public deck meeting on October 23rd. There was a timeline that was created to conduct the study in a fair, open, and responsible manner, and that timeline is posted on the website for everyone to see. If you want to have a look at Policy 409, it can be found on our website or the government website. It's out there for all to have a look at. Right now, when you go to our website, and I should show that to you as soon as I'm done with the presentation here. If you go to our website, some of the things that are on there now is the timeline, the letter that was sent to the minister to launch the sustainability study. Anytime we send a letter to parents or guardians, we post that as well. There's a Stanley at a glance document, as well as the link to Policy 409, and tomorrow we'll post this presentation. And there's more than one way to give feedback as well. It's our hope that we have a number of presentations at the February 5th meeting, but you can email us at asdwsustainability@nded.mb.ca. I believe, Carol, you get those, right? And Carol will keep them organized and ensure that the District Education Council will have an opportunity to read your feedback. You can participate in the discussion board, and there are some active participants. I know I can think now of four or five different names who have been making comments. I go on and check it every now and then, and if there are specific questions that are asked, I'll do my best to answer those questions. Some of those questions may have been answered tonight. If you prefer, you could certainly send mail to Carol. She'll keep it organized and make sure that the council sees everything that you send along. Here's the timeline, and once again, this is posted, so it just shows how it all started on October 23rd. I met with our deck chair had the responsibility to write to the minister to let him know that the sustainability studies would begin. I met with staff on that day to talk about putting this presentation together. I continued to write to parents. There was the initial letter that went to parents informing them officially of the study, and then the reminder that went out earlier this week. Of course, tonight we're here for public meeting number one. I met with the staff a little earlier today as well to ensure they understood the process. I will write to you again, parents, before Christmas, and I'll outline a registration process and parameters for making that public presentation. I'll remind you about public meeting number two in early February, and that meeting, if you want to mark it on your calendars now, is February 5th. Then we get into March, and I'll write to parents again to remind them of the third public meeting. Because we have three sustainability studies, the decision has been made to stay with our original deck schedule, and the meeting will happen at Priestman Elementary School in Fredericton. But if there's an interest from the public, we can set up a feed here, and Tanya, the director of schools, is happy to come out and host you that night so you can watch the deck meeting. Of course, you're welcome to come into Fredericton as well. That meeting will be on March 19th, where the council by then will have had a lot of time to go over these notes, go over the information that you share for feedback, probably ask me a million questions. I'll probably ask these guys for a lot of help in answering those questions so that they can be as informed as possible in trying to decide which of those three directions they would like to go. The very next day, March 20th, my guess is there'll be, if you didn't tune in March 19th, you'll likely hear about it March 20th. I'm sure that the Daily Gleaner follows us. They're here tonight, and we there'll be some public news about it. Mark, as our chair, will write to the minister and advise him of the outcome of our three studies. And as I mentioned before, the minister, according to that policy, has no less than 30 days and no more than 60 days to respond if indeed he has to approve a recommendation. Those are the last two slides. And I think I just, before we turn it over to questions, I'd just like to show you, I hope I'm still online. Here I am, yes. So our website is www.asd, I'm going to punch it in right from the beginning, www.asd-w.nbed.nb.ca. And that's on some of the letters that have been sent home. And I'm sure if you forget that website, the school is able to remind you. And that takes you to this front page of our website. If you ever want to check out the reports that I submit as a superintendent, they're public and posted here. If you want to learn more about the District Education Council, review their minutes or listen to the audio. I believe tonight's meeting is being recorded and will be posted. Please make sure you check things out. Specific to the sustainability studies, as you scroll down, you can see here that there's a section where you can click. A little bit of preamble about the sustainability studies. Again, you would click. There's your opportunity to have a look at policy 409, the actual policy that guides us in this process. And then, by all means, it's public. If you want to check things out for Bath or Coles Island, go ahead. My guess is you're most interested in Stanley, so you do a little click, and here we are. And you can see along the right, we have a posting of a number of documents. This was a posting that we put up today as well Chief Medical Officer of Health. I think I have that term right. Just go over. This was a recommendation from a member of the public. Chief Medical Officer of Health's recommendations concerning shale gas. So again, it's just another piece of information for people to have a look at. I told you before there's a section from the CISN report. I talk a lot tonight about the February 5th meeting because that's the opportunity for you to present to the council and to your neighbors here in the community. There's a simple page, and I made about 15 copies here tonight. If you are thinking about a presentation, you might want to take one tonight. And it's as simple as we asked for it a week before so that we can prepare an agenda where you'd give the name of your group, the name of the individuals presenting, give us a phone number and an email, and the approximate time that you think you'd need for a presentation, and if you need any technology or give us any other relevant information. If there are 100 presentations, we'll probably have to keep them short, If there are a few presentations, then obviously the person that might get the mic for a little bit longer, but if we have this registration form a week in advance, we'll be able to map out a really good agenda for that particular night. Tonight, in a minute, I'm going to stop talking. I'm sure that'll make a lot of people happy, and try and answer your questions specifically about the presentation tonight, and I'll flip back and forth. And then, of course, I made mention of some of the other documents that are here. I hope you take some time to click through them. And then the comment board. If there's a competition between Stanley and Coles Island and Bath, you guys are winning. 47 comments, and some from today by the looks of things. So an opportunity for you to express your comments, and I encourage you to do so. So with that, I will now I'll turn it over to our chair, I think. And I'll have a drink of water, and Mark, you can talk about the questions.
Sure, well, I'm gonna turn it right back to you because you'll be able to answer the questions, but just a reminder about the meeting on coming up in February to make presentations. Tonight, we want to give you some time to ask David some questions, ask questions about the presentation, and anything you heard tonight, or anything along those lines about the process. So I'll turn it back to David. Hope that was good water.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. McDonald, you're first.
Yes, Kurt McDonald, SHS graduate. I had an opportunity to meet with Wayne Adams, who I've known for many years as the former principal of the Keswick Valley School. And as I understand it, he was in charge of looking at the economic development piece. And I was unsure exactly what would motivate the board members one way or another. What caused this decision to come about in the first place? You know, from what I hear, based on your presentation tonight, the physical plant isn't in that bad shape. Operating costs, for the most part, continue to decline, but that's a function of student population. I hear some of the challenges associated with the staff are that they both have to provide an administration function and a teaching function, but I don't think the staff of this school have ever voiced that concern, although I stand to be corrected on that. But I'm wondering, just because I had an opportunity to speak with Mr. Annis directly, at what point do we say, okay, at this population point, the Stanley School, both elementary and high school, stay as is, versus, you know, a point below that or a point above. So it, you know, it's a lot like some of the discussions we've had in Natwick over the years. Mm-hmm. Where's that magic number? And I guess I'm wondering, where's the magic number for the Stanley School? Because I sincerely believe that over the next few years, we're going to see a population increase based on some of the economic development activities that you outlined. And I also understand that the staff in question, that the administrative staff in question, in large measure, have contracts that they're in for a few years now. So I'm wondering, given the fact that we have every reason to believe that the population of the community will increase, and by extension the population of the school would hopefully increase, and given the fact that some of our administrators are already in longer term contracts, is there a possibility to stay this decision for a period of time, see if in fact in 24 months the population does increase, and if it does increase to a certain point, leave things the way they are. So I'm wondering where that where that number is and whether or not we've truly taken into account the fact that Stanley does have a very genuine opportunity to see a population increase in the next short while.
Thank you for the question. There really is no exact threshold or number to go one way or the other, but really that's what the study is all about. So right now, you're elected council. This is a body that's been elected by the public within Anglophone West to provide governance to the school system in our school district, has that responsibility to listen to the information, to do their reading, to talk amongst themselves, and then on March 19th, make a decision. And that decision could be to maintain the status quo, which is a decision that was made by the former District 17 Education Council in 2011 when they conducted the sustainability study at Burton Elementary School. It could be a decision to ask the minister to make significant investments to programming or in the building, or it could be to ask the minister to close the school. And in this case, when we say close the school, what it means is close one school in favor of one K-12 school and not necessarily move students. And the example I would use, that would be a former District 18 sustainability study. When we look at Jane right now, 2010, I think it was, Douglas Elementary School, where a school was closed and the students moved on. So we've seen examples over recent years with the outcomes of sustainability studies. There is no exact science. It's a decision of a governing body right now based on information that's provided by staff, represented by me, and by stakeholders, mostly out there as well. It's important to note that when I present my information, I'm not attempting to sway the council in one way or another. My mandate is to provide the information. My guess is on February 5th, there will be some groups that will try to sway the council one way or another. And that's what should be happening, and they need to hear that. Sure, go ahead.
The Douglas School, if memory serves correctly, was built in 1873.
I think you're right.
Until it was closed, it was New Brunswick's oldest operating schoolhouse. And the reason for its closure were twofold, as I understand it. There was a large segment of the population in the Douglas-Carlisle Road area that had elected to take their children into Fredericton so that they could access French language training. And there was a significant capital outlay to bring the school up to even the minimum standards. I think in particular the septic was one of the major issues. But getting back to Stanton, if there's no significant requirements or needs around the physical plant, if the teaching staff and the administration staff are comfortable providing those dual activities that you spoke of earlier, what was the reason for this decision? What was the reason for this school to be reviewed in the first place? What was the catalyst? Do you track costs to educate a student per year, or what put Stanley on the radar screen of the day?
What put Stanley on the radar of the deck would have been a report filed by me as the superintendent in a part of the annual planning cycle. That report is available publicly on our website. And at that time, I walked through a series of steps and different rationale to come up with the three schools that are being studied. Two of those schools, Bath and Coles Island, were a different scenario than Stanley. So with respect to Stanley, it's not necessarily enrollment or finances or the building or one particular thing that's saying you should study this. It's more along the lines of the unique circumstance that we have one building with two separate schools. I say unique. There are a few different scenarios around our province where the scenarios I think of are Caledonia and Hillsborough Elementary, where there are two buildings and a walkway between the two and two principals. There are a couple scenarios in the Francophone system as well. It's not, and the fact that we have five K to 12 schools in Anglophone West that range in size from 150 students right up into the 500s at Heartland Community School, it seemed reasonable that the District Education Council take a look at what might be the best course of action. Is it better for the school to exist as a K to 12 school, or is it best the way it is right now? And my recommendation to study it was based more along the lines of, let's open the door to dig in deep, to hear from the community, to look at the details, look at the information, so that an informed decision can be made. Yes, I'll go here and then at the back.
I just like to follow with Kirk's comment about the mine. So I'm just wondering if, goodness, my voice doesn't sound good on one of these. I'm just wondering, so we're going to get that many people supposedly to move to the area for this project. Is this decision reversible? Like, if schools were to be amalgamated into one body, and then, say, 2 years down the road, we have a huge influx of population, what's going to happen then? Are we have one principal in charge of a huge population and all the social issues that go along with that? Like, I'm just wondering, can it be reversed at that point, or is that even
We wouldn't be thinking that far ahead. I can note that there's an example where it was reversed in our province in the past. I tried to dig up a little bit more information today as I was thinking more about the K to 12. And I hope you have a chance to look at the K to 12 document that we posted. But there was one example where they went to one principal and then reversed the decision a couple of years later. So I'm sure I'll talk to, that's probably something that the DEC will want to hear about, and I'll gather some more information about that. As I mentioned, the enrollment is one piece of the puzzle, one piece of data that's presented as information. In our district, we have five K to 12 schools, with our biggest one being in Heartland, and the enrollment there is in the, and I'm sorry, I don't have the exact number, but it's in the low 500s, if I remember correctly. We have some smaller K-12 schools, one in Edmonston, which would be in the mid 150 range, as well as Cambridge Narrows School in the 150 range as well. There was a question at the back.
Well, I guess you pretty well answered the question I had, but one other question is, if the two schools are still separated, would this discussion be on today? 20 years ago.
That's a great question. I can say that the fact that it's one building is certainly was certainly a catalyst in my recommendation to the DEC, And now it has to be a consideration for them as they deliberate on what they should do in March. We would have other examples in our province where there are buildings within a community that are very close to each other. And then we would have examples in our district where they were very close to each other and then there was a consolidation. And I think in particular of, remember in Boys Town, there was a K to 5 school right next to the 6 to 12 school, and then the 6 to 12 school merged with the 6 to 12s from Doaketown. So there are different examples historically out there in our province, but I can say yes, it was the fact that it's one building is what made it unique and stand out to me to say, hey, maybe you guys need to look at this more closely and try and determine what is the best course of action.
Is this best for the kids?
Well, that's what we need to figure out, yes.
And you might have one principal looking after kids from 4-year-old to 17.
Yep.
Big difference and big responsibility.
That's right. So that's a big part of the process is for the council to deliberate what is best for the kids, because I'm sure that will be an important factor in their decision. It has to be. So there might be some that argue, you know what, it's better to have someone that specializes in elementary and someone that specializes in secondary, where others might say, you know what, it's better if we had a full-time principal who could focus solely on administration and not have to worry about lesson planning and teaching. So I'm sure there are arguments for both. And when I think about this process, I know that the DEC will want for me to present data and information and challenge me with questions so that I can give them the information they need to make that decision. Yes, ma'am, and then sir, and then Mayor Corbin.
If this amalgamation goes forward, I think that we will need a new central office. I can speak plenty of that.
Just to make sure people at the back.
I think we would need a new central office because both of our offices right now are embedded in the respective schools.
Right.
So my question is, are you prepared to build a new central office prior to an amalgamation?
Oh, well, that's not a question that I can answer on the spot immediately. Obviously, we need to take into account the safety of students. We need to think about how that would work. We see a variety of different scenarios when it comes to offices and their locations within schools throughout our district. Right now, I note that depending on the entrance that you come in, the office isn't right at the door, so there's definitely some room for improvement. I think that is an important topic to discuss. I know I mentioned it in part in one of my slides, but I anticipate that's a question that will be asked, and I'll probably be working with Sean and Philip to talk about, you know, what is it that we could do if the two schools were to come together. And if we needed a new office area, what type of scenarios? But I recognize that as one of the things that we would need to really think about. And I think it was pointed out as well in the discussion board. Mayor Foreman.
Yes, I saw a lot of numbers here tonight. Excuse me. And I saw a lot of structure of what we have. I did not see anything about what structure is being proposed. So if we go with this amalgamation, how do we know it's good for our area and our kids and our community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. If the decision is made to move forward with the K to 12 concept, one school within one building, then there has to be some planning put in place, and we'll need to get feedback from stakeholders who can help with those decisions. We need to talk with staff. Yes, that's That's true.
Well, my question is, how can the district council make a decision without knowing the structure you're going to agree to?
My guess is in the next 4 months, they're going to ask me a lot of those questions, and then I'm going to be sent to find the answers.
Well, how can we prepare information or questions for you and the district council on February 5th if we don't know the structure? And is it beneficial to our community?
Yeah. The mandate of the February 5th meeting is for you to present your thoughts on the sustainability study in itself. And if you don't think that, for instance, the structure of the building can accommodate K-12 as a building, then
well, it's not the structure, it's the teaching from the principal down laid out in front of us. What are we going to have if we allow them? We have one principal, mm-hmm. one vice principal. What follows underneath that? Our custodial staff?
Sure.
Our teaching staff? Where do they fall into this? And what's that ratio, student ratio begin there? And how are classes amalgamated, not amalgamated?
Right.
Teaching assignments, the whole works.
Yep. Yeah, and those staffing decisions are based on formulas that won't change. And I can certainly map out a scenario if, for instance, if it was K-12 today, what the FTE would look like and what the assignments would look like. It's an annual thing, because remember when I used the guidance as an example, the formula would spit out that the school should have 0.49 guidance, yet it's assigned 1.0. That's an annual decision based on the FTE that we have from the province and an exercise that we go through every spring. So I can't say, if I had to say exactly what it would be, then I'd be forced to say 0.49, although I know that when the spring comes along and we look at the big picture, it's going to be more than 0.49. I don't know if it's going to be 1.0 or 0.9, but what I do know is the process wouldn't be any different if it was two schools or one school.
Well, it would be a lot easier to understand if you could put two columns in. What we gain and what we lose by amalgamation.
Yeah.
It'd be easier for everybody to understand, and at least you could debate it then.
Sure.
When I don't have an understanding of what we're losing in the school systems,
mm-hmm.
in general terms, and
I can
lose the principal, and we'll, so
that's right.
If we amalgamate.
Right.
So what's that do to our staff? Mm-hmm. What's that do to the custodians? What's that do?
Sure.
The overall picture of the school operation.
I can create that chart. Yeah, I can create that chart and post it to the site, and I'll do that in a timely manner so that people can have time to reflect on it in preparation for February 5th.
Thank you.
So I have a long history with this school, and from the information that you gave us tonight, I can see that the elementary school is doing some wonderful things with these kids, and so is the high school. I have a hard time with thinking, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I kind of feel that way about it, and so I'm wondering, why was it, Mark, maybe you could answer this question. Why was the Stanley Schools chosen for this study? Why were we chosen for the study? If it's not broke, why would you try to fix it?
Sure. Well, David had already said earlier, really he's responsible for making a presentation to the Education Council every year on our schools. And so what he did is he made a presentation on our schools, and he chose three schools to recommend for sustainability studies, as was mentioned when Mr. McDonald asked. There's different reasons why he would recommend Coles Island and Bath versus Stanley. So it's not that anything was broken, it's just he looked at two schools operating under one building and said, let's ask some questions. Now, and that's his role. Our role as a DAC and his role as a superintendent is to operate the district as efficiently as possible. So I'm not going to speak on behalf of the deck now. I'm going to speak on behalf of my 12 years as a deck member. And I feel that I would want my superintendent to let me know if there's any efficiencies to be had. This study is to make sure we are running as efficiently, and as was already brought up, we're doing the best for our students. At the end of the day, that may mean as a deck, we vote to leave it the status quo. Or that may mean that there are some things that we can gain without affecting quality education. And that's why we're here listening. That's why we've asked Mr. McKinley to make the presentation. So
you were given three schools to study.
Yes.
You didn't choose the schools to study. You were given those three schools to
study. It was recommended. And we voted to accept the recommendation. Yeah. And he can recommend whatever he wants based on all the work of the staff.
I'll go here. Oh, okay, and this here. Okay, I'll go here, and then towards the back. Yes, sir.
Just to follow up on Mr. Foreman's comment, I wonder if we could have a third comment or column that gives us a financial benefit that we see, what we see for teaching changes, but also how much it would cost us or how much we'd save, including all the existing contracts that be involved in the school. The other point that I had is, one of the points you were discussing, the impact on other schools. I know I'm just a new parent, and it's something I'm thinking about, where my little girl has to go to school, and I think that for a decision, what school I'm going to take it to. I know many parents in this community take their kids to another school. I know there's lots of schools on the outskirts that are busting at the seams, and I think that for my decision making, if I knew there was a K-12 school here, more options to go to an elementary school, I think going to an elementary school would be much more appealing to me. So I know that the number of students that we have in the school dictate what we have for FTEs of administrative, our extracurricular, everything that's involved in the school. And I think it would be important to study what impact this has on the O'Hays, what it has on our railroad, if we do make changes like this to our school.
Thank you. And then I was going to come here, and then I'll go to the back.
Really, just looking for some clarification. We've been directed to websites and boards and things that have visited for a process. And I'm wondering about getting information in front of decision makers, so in front of the deck, prior to that February 5th meeting. If we have information we want them to go over and so forth, ahead of that, how would we get it to them? Is it enough to post it to that board? Does that mean the deck members will see it, or does that have to come in through another thing?
Sure, if you would like it for all of the public to see, then you could send it to Carol and me, and we would post it to the board, and the deck knows that the board is being updated regularly. If it's not something you necessarily want posted publicly for everyone to see, but you want it as a message to the deck, then you could write it to us electronically, email using that ASDW email, or you could send it to us, and then we would prepare it and make sure that they have it. What's called a deck portal, where we post a lot of their information, and it's just them that has access to it, or we'll copy it and prepare it for them. And now we're going to the back. Yes, sir.
So, if this goes through with one principal, am I getting this right? Is just one person going to lose their job, or is it two people going to lose their job? There's going to be a principal that's going to be eliminated. Is that correct?
That's right. If it was a K-12 school, then there would be one principal and one vice principal, and we would make those decisions based on the teachers' collective agreement.
Oh, is there any other small schools that you can bring into the Stanley School to build up their enclave? I mean, I've lived here all my life, and I've never heard of this stuff before. I mean, I had two kids went through the school.
Right.
I graduated through here, and now all of a sudden, we're going to eliminate teachers. I mean, We used to build them up.
Yeah, that doesn't...
We probably had less kids back 35, 40 years ago when I was there.
Right.
Than there is now.
Yeah, just to clarify, that doesn't mean somebody's out the door not working anymore. What that would mean is their role would change within our system. They would still have a full-time job. It wouldn't necessarily be as principal, but they would still have a full-time job within our system. Their collective agreement protects them in that way.
Well, I don't see any sense in losing that principal. If it is, is it not monetary value? Is that? I don't understand it.
Yeah, and sure, I'll summarize the financial piece as recommended over here. The financial difference with respect to administration is not exorbitant by any means.
Well, I think it should stay the same, gentlemen. I think we're an awful mess.
Thank you. And then I'm just going to go to the very back there and then up front here.
Just out of interest, what's your cost estimate or budget for the sustainability study, at least with respect to the standards? Just out of interest.
What's it costing to conduct this study?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have an exact figure. Some of the costs associated with the study would be travel costs for the deck to come out tonight for the public meeting and to come back out in February. There would be some costs. There's a requirement in the policy for us to ensure that the public is properly notified. We're doing that by posting. When I came out here last weekend, I put one up in the rink and I stopped by the school and they're putting them up throughout the community. There are some costs with respect to posting it in the newspaper. We put an advertisement in. I think that might be about it. Some time and energy on the part of staff. But when I think of financial costs, that would be about it.
Another question, just out of interest, there are the three options. So basically, the first option is status quo, and the third option, you explained, is not financial closure, it would be consolidation.
Correct.
But is that second option not relevant in this?
The second option you don't hear about very often because, although it is an option for the deck to choose, it would be to ask the minister to invest significantly in the building or in the programming. Now, in the case of Douglas Elementary, to make that request, it would have been significant money into the building. Here, you saw our list of capital improvement projects, and I'll turn to Philip. I don't think any of them are immediate necessities, are they? I know that we talked a lot about the soccer field as being one and that we want to look at, hopefully, as soon as possible. The investment in programming. So for instance, 0.49 for guidance, and then I find it within the 1,700 FTE that I get in a district to top it up to 1.0. An investment in programming might be government saying, okay, David, you don't have to go digging for it. We're going to give you extra FTE so that you can make this happen. I guess the danger in that might be the deck sees that as their choice and the minister may say, well, given the state of finances these days, it's hard to do, and if we do that for Stanley, we do that for the others. So it's the one less talked about. It still is an option.
And I guess my last point or question would be where it's called a sustainability study. Seems that it's a bit in scope in terms of if the idea is that it's the building that the school is underutilized and or over capacity. I think Jim maybe made reference to, you know, there are a lot of kids that are right on the boundary there to say Tino or Highland Heights. And, you know, has there been any is that outside the mandate of this study to look at ways of potentially increasing the numbers at this school where there's some overcrowding in other schools, or at least downstream?
No, No, thank you. And when it comes to boundaries, that's an exercise that gets examined every now and then. I know that in this particular case, there was an examination. This was before my time and probably before Mark's time, anybody here, with respect to when Leo Hayes was created. And I know finding that right boundary, and I think someone even mentioned it, if I remember correctly, in the discussion board. But boundaries get talked about every now and then. There is a district policy that we have with respect to a process where parents may make a request to attend a school outside of their catchment area, and we see that happens at times. Yes, sir, right here at the front.
Yeah, I want to direct address this issue of cost, because if you're going to do this right, this school was architecturally designed, and it's over a number of years that this evolved. It was planned and it evolved, and I think the architects did an inspired job of creating this complex out of two schools. Is the deck, is the district, and is the province ready to spend money for another architectural study to do any renovations to make this central administration work within the confines of what we already have here? Mm-hmm. We have this beautiful complex that functions, and I say don't fool it. The other point that I'd like to make is that you're in your silo of district and with the Department of Education, and you're talking about these costs. You're going to have to consult Chief Medical Officer of Health, Department of Energy and Mines, Business New Brunswick, Natural Resources, all these departments. So there's going to be greater costs than what you're talking about to put together this study. So if you're talking dollars, then get all those dollars on the board and not just your little circle working in the silo.
Thanks for your comments. This is a list of those that were consulted. We have economic development is one of the subsections of policy 409. And as I mentioned earlier, we're educators and we work within the system. So we do our best to gather information. We know that you as well, in preparation for February 5th, you'll likely do some consultation as well and present the deck with information that we may have missed along the way. But your point is well taken about consultation with outside stakeholders.
The point is the cost of making that consultation with all those government departments preparing reports, and hopefully we will see what they say to you. You'll see that. And it won't be just condensed, summarized by the Department of Education or the district.
Over here, and then back to Mr. McDonald.
I think we all agree that we all want what's best for our kids. And I guess one of my concerns would be, I think in the presentation it was probably discussed too, combining roles. So say there's one guidance counselor for both schools, one gym teacher for both schools, that type of thing. I know right now the schools have two different timetables, and part of that's too, so they can share this room here, so everybody can share the cafeteria at different times, things like that. So I'm just wondering how, like, somebody's gonna lose out, because if a teacher is in a guidance role in the high school right now, and then then they have to go to the elementary school, I would think there'd be, you know, somebody's gonna lose out on one end or the other, you know what I mean? Like, that's a concern, because, you know, they should have equal time. I would guess they would need equal time. And then the other part of it would be to have a staff member, and I don't know, because I've never gone through teacher's college or anything like that, but to have a teacher who can go and work and teach a kindergarten child how to do somersaults, and then lead the basketball team to win provincials, that takes a lot of different skills. That's just one example. I mean, you know, guidance would be huge. There'd be a huge range. So how do other schools, how do they handle that? And is that taken into consideration with the existing staff that we have?
Sure, no, great points. And when you use the guidance example, there wouldn't be much of a change because currently 0.3 guidance at one school and 0.7 guidance at the other school are assigned to the same person. So it's working that way right now. I note your point about the variation. Like for instance, if you look at physical education and you remember there are six classrooms, so 6.6 teachers, so 0.6 for specialty. I'm sure some goes to music and some might go to phys ed. And then you look at the high school allotment, and I don't know it exactly. It's one that we would need to work with administration. It could be beneficial in terms of having a physical education expert that does all the grades, or it could be, as you said, that the phys ed teacher might be more comfortable in one way or another. And we would certainly be a part of helping that teacher grow professionally. It's hard for me to say what's right or wrong. That's what we're trying to figure out. What's the best scenario for Stanley right now? We see it working in some schools. I'm sure when you read the K-12 comparison chart that we made, you'll also see some things that aren't working, and they list it, and it's shared with you. So it's balancing that out.
I guess I was just concerned about losing a very talented teacher, perhaps, just because maybe they're more suited for elementary as opposed to high school.
Right.
You know, they're very talented with one age group as opposed to another age group. So, as far as losing teachers, we don't want to lose any of our teachers. You know, as far as bringing in other teachers, we'd welcome to have more teachers, but I'm sure that's not going to be the case. So.
Right. Thank you. Mr. McDonald, you're next.
Last question of the evening for me, I promise. But I'm still just wondering what motivates the council to vote in one direction versus another. And I think of the decision with the Millville School a few years back, and there was a decision made that, or a recommendation made, that perhaps the Millville School should be closed. And you can make a case for that. I mean, you can stand on Maple Ridge almost within sight of the Millville School and be standing inside the Nagwick school catchment area. So, I mean, there was a case out there that was made, and ultimately it was decided that we would not proceed with that decision to close the Millville School and move the children to Nagwick. A lot of parents got involved and whatnot, and I understand that closure in this instance is something very different than what closure was around that recommendation. But if we can go back to the Millville discussion that took place, what were the key elements in Millville's argument that helped make the decision to keep the school open? Can you shed a little light on that?
Hard for me too, because that was before my time. With respect to motivation of District Education Council, I don't know if Mr. Chair, you'd like to talk a bit about that?
I can speak on the motivation of DEC members as far as when it comes to the vote. Generally speaking, I can tell you that I think all of us are parents. I only say I think, I don't know everyone's personal life, but I think we're all parents. And I think because of this presentation and because of your questions, not only have I written down some of your questions, some I've already written down before you asked them. I wrote down more questions. So I have two pages that need to be answered. And it really is going to come down to, as a parent, but also our responsibility as a DEC member to be responsible for education. Unfortunately, we have something in education called finances. And so we have to look at finances. We have to look at quality of education. One of the things I wrote down, which was brought up numerous times, when it comes to, you know, what it would look like. Safety is important. For me personally, I don't know how all the information is going to come out. But I have a 17-year-old and a 7-year-old. It's like having two only children, but anyway. You know, I don't want high school students interacting with elementary. So it's got to be done in a safe way. Those are questions that we're going to seek out. So it's really the same as you. What is the best for students? What is fiscally responsible? How can we run our districts efficiently, but also the best way for our schools? And this really is a good night, and it's a good school in the sense there's not, it's still an important decision, but we're hearing about how well both sides operate. We're hearing about test scores. We're hearing about student involvement. I was here last year with the student engagement exercise. So this is a good night. There's a lot of celebration. There's still a lot of questions and important decision to make. And yeah, we will all make it as responsible elected officials and as parents. So that's kind of what's going to motivate us.
Okay, we'll go there and then after that. Yes.
Did you speak to anyone else in those K to 12 schools besides the principal about how well the school operates? I find sometimes the principal doesn't really know how well the school is operating. I'll speak to you later.
My question went to the principals, and I can't answer 100% what they did with it. Most of the time when I email a principal with a reflective question like this, most of the time they talk to their VPs, they might talk to their teachers, they may talk to students. I don't have a direct answer. This is what the chart looks like. I asked a little bit about student representative council. Oh, sorry, I'm going too fast. I asked about building designations, expansions, and consolidations. The person, and I forget who the person was that authored the recommendation on the discussion board, probably sees some common language here. I asked about the main office and a positive learning environment. And you know, there were some principals that said, I tell you, it's not good if a small child sees an older student acting in a bad way. But on the other hand, principals also said those older students behave very responsibly in front of the younger students. So it's there's some benefit in both. Positives of being in a K-12 learning community, and some challenges of being in a K-12 learning community. So there are lots of comments there.
Are we going to take a look at that? The reason I just want to make a comment.
Sure.
My son, when he came to the school in elementary, he was very shy and he was really scared of the big kids. Mm-hmm. And if we came in the front door, and I was with him in the front door, he was scared until he got to the, and I mean terrified, face to the wall, walking sideways down the hall. Face to the wall. How is he going to make it? How would he make it to the principal's office? How could he have a positive learning environment in a K-12 school? And I know he wouldn't be the only kid with that problem. He was terrified of those big kids.
And there are some kids to be terrified of, but there are also some kids that potentially could have worked with your child and welcomed him and helped him in his growth. So it can go either way. Yes, the comments are interesting. These are the schools. OEC stands for Oromocto Education Center. So Cambridge Narrows, that's actually where I started my teaching career in 1995. It's a K-12 school. And Canterbury is in the Woodstock Education Center. Actually, four of them are in the Woodstock Education Center. Canterbury is a rural school. Cambridge Narrows would be considered rural as well, where the other three are in a town, and St. Mary's is actually in the city of Edmundston. We only have one school in the city of Edmundston, a K-12 school, because most of the schools there are in the Francophone system. But there are some comments that you'll see, especially in these last few pages, the positives of being in a K-12 learning community, as well as the challenges.
Can I just add one piece, David?
Yes.
We could probably also put together data from the perception surveys and the provincial assessment results and school review data.
Yes.
Comparing K-12 schools and with the other schools.
That's right. All of that. All of that is available publicly at the government website, www.gnv.ca, and then I always go to, this is a long way in, but the easy way to remember, gnv.ca being the government of New Brunswick, and then I always go up to departments, and I click on Education and Early Childhood Development, and so this is the education, the provincial education and early childhood development. And if you go into, see if I can remember now, publications and statistics, lots of neat statistics and publications there. And you go down to report on achievement, you can access any school in the province. So in this particular case, if you look at Anglophone West, you can look at the assessment scores of any of our schools, as well as the perception survey details. And I encourage you to check out some of those schools to see what kids are saying about bullying and safety in the schools, and maybe compare it to other small rural schools. But it's there for everyone to see. Thanks, Tanya.
I just wanted to say that appreciate your efforts for coming here tonight and doing your homework. But you said earlier that you don't know what's right or wrong. Well, we're here to tell you exactly what's right. If it's not broke, don't fix it. Case closed. So put that.
Thank you.
You hit on a good example, Mark, when you said that your kids are separated by 10 years.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea of having this complex designed the way it was. That if the younger child needed support from the family, he or she can go get it from this elder sibling. And at the same time, have independence over here and have the structure that they can go to the principal over here and not be frightened to go there, to take that step down the hallway. So I think because we have a unique situation, we have a really good one for our kids and our communities. And that's one thing that should always come first.
Oh, is there one more we want to?
Okay, so my husband and I, we had a choice when we moved back from Nova Scotia. We could come back to Stanley where he is from. He went to the school, he graduated, we could live in town. And we chose to come here because we had a child and we knew that we wanted him to come here. We liked the school, we liked how it was set up, and that influenced our decision. So here I am, my child's four. I've just registered him for kindergarten next year, so I'm sitting at this meeting because it's important to me. And I want to know, how much does the parental opinion actually have an influence on this? If all of the parents and all of the community says we like our school the way it is, we want you to leave it, how much of that going to be taken into consideration, or is it okay, thanks, we hear you, but still our decision?
Toughest question for that. Of course it's important, and just a reminder that on the 5th, when presentations are made, what will happen? is we will ask questions as DEC members as well, so that we can get a sense of what you want. Not, you know, and obviously you expressed opinion, leave it alone, but, you know, obviously we have a responsibility to look at the facts. We have the tough job, you know, to look at everything, still provide quality education, but yet look at the sustainability of our schools, look at how the system operates, make improvements. In this case, it may be leaving it the same. We have come here with an open mind. So we certainly want to thank you for all your questions and your comments. I've been through this more than once, and I can tell you that this has been very helpful and very respectful. And we look forward to February. Please, if you know anyone thinking of presenting, encouraging them to put it together, register. You know, you'll have access to PowerPoint and all that. We certainly want to thank you for your time. Being here tonight, thank you for David's work and the staff and putting together the presentation. We'll be here for a couple minutes. If you need to see any of us before we slip out the door, that's fine as well. Again, thank you for being here tonight.